Mr. Herman.
Poop again! Party on, dude!
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Extreme close up!
So do you guys remember, this was a bit, I feel like this has been a big thing ever since paper was invented, but you know, fortune tellers, aka cootie catchers?
Cootie catchers, yes. Of course.
Yes, yes.
So like when I was in school, they were eventually banned because they were so disruptive. Like, but at the kids' school, like now, these days, we use them as like tools for learning or like keeping the kids busy stuff like that. I mean, this is how I got through the weeks between Thanksgiving to Christmas with these, with 20 kids or whatever, is like they just love them. They'll so you give them the templates for it and they just cut them out and fold them and can I make another one?
Yes.
And then they walk around and
just make Cody catches.
They do. But the problem is like the oldest ones are like second graders, and so their reading comprehension is not always the best, and so really it's just all this work for me.
Right.
I'm like, Miss Samantha, what does this say? And then they're like, what does that mean? And I'm like, listen, kid, I got these from Teachers Pay Teachers. It's for social emotional learning and conflict resolution.
Yeah.
Because damn it, you're going to learn something.
Yes. Exactly.
So I was looking for more cootie catchers, and I found someone on Etsy. I only had enough ink to make one copy. I wanted to make one for all of us. But she had a willow one, which I purchased and will print off and make sure you guys get them. But then she had a Princess Bride one.
All right.
And so I thought,
I forgot how they worked.
Well, well, lucky for you that over the last 6 weeks, I've done nothing but fold cootie catchers and show first graders how to use them.
That's what we call in the biz a softball.
What?
I was setting you up.
Oh, thank you. That's what I thought you meant. But I was like, but which part's the softball?
Oh, okay. Yes.
So
swing
I thought inside are some quotes from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll let you guys, somebody who wants to go first.
I'll go.
Okay.
Steven, this is Steven speaking here.
Steven's going.
Mission Control, can you hear me?
Is it point at something? Or
just pick one, and normally there would be like words there and you would spell them out.
Right.
So I'll just make up what I want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
So like this will be kiss, pirate, story, and part. That's what we'll do.
Okay. I'll just do kiss.
Yeah, that's what Brian did too.
Oh.
K-I-S-S.
Oh,
okay.
Right.
Now pick a number.
Do 3.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. Pick another number.
Is that a 6 or a 9?
It's a 6.
6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, last number.
I'll do another 6.
Okay. I already know what this quote is because this is what Brian ended up on. It is, life isn't fair. It's just fairer than death. That's all.
Hmm. Huh.
So that's actually one it's not as well known of a quote.
I was going to say, like,
it's in the book, but I thought when I read it in the book again, because I've read the book many, many times.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's, as I have been telling people, I was rereading it again, rereading it the last few weeks, and people at school were like, oh, who's reading The Princess Bride? And I was like, me? It's my number one favorite book of all time.
So glad you asked.
I'm so glad you asked.
Yeah, and then that's...
It came before the movie, but I saw the movie before I read the book.
Right, exactly.
And the movie is in my top 5, but this is my number one favorite book every damn time
Those
someone
triggers,
asks me. Every damn time.
In my, it is, you start with one thing. It's like in your head, it's like it's imperative that they know every single detail.
This detail.
Yeah, exactly.
And thankfully... I'm in a place now where like everybody's just like, oh, cool. Like, you know, they don't look at me sideways for all my, there may be times when I'm too jumbled and they're kind of looking at me uncertain, but they're trying really hard to, I'm in a very healthy place right now.
I'm very glad. Good.
So a very healthy work environment, which is very difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I know it's in, and I could have sworn when I was reading it recently in the book, I was like, I don't think that's in the movie. So the book definitely has a little bit of a sword edge on it that's not as much in the movie. So just, and we can talk about that after we do Cootie Catcher and intro and stuff.
It's good.
All right, so pick one.
Which one's that one?
Heart.
Heart, just heart. Yeah.
Okay. H-E-A-R-T. Wouldn't it be terrible if I spelled one of these words wrong?
H-E-R-E-R-E-E-T.
Okay.
I think that's too many R's. Three.
One, two, three.
Two. Was that a two?
One, two. It's one through eight.
Oh, okay.
So.
Six.
No, we just did six. You can't pick that. It's.
Oh, I didn't realize I was on the last thing.
Sorry, okay. You're on the last one.
That one right there.
Okay, let's see. One. Do I love you? My God, if your love were a grain of sand, mine would be a universe of beaches. This may be from the book.
I was going to say.
I think it's a lot from the book.
I think these are from the book because I don't remember.
Someone's a real fan.
Made this is a real fan. Fan. I can't talk. I mean, some of these are, when I was your age, television was called books.
Well, yeah.
That's
Peter Falk. But
I thought that was you for a second. I was like, no, they weren't.
No, we had TV.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Did we have TV.
I mean, I read lots of
books.
Well,
of course. Yeah.
But we...
I watched a lot of TV.
Yeah.
Mom was tired. She had six kids and bless.
See, you're looking at that now and I'm thinking that's a quote from the movie. And I was
is
that from the
book? No. One of my favorite lines, though, and you know what? Carrie Ellis has, there's a list of the famous quotes in the first part there. But this is one of my absolute, you seem a decent fellow, Inigo said. I hate to kill you.
Yeah.
You seem a decent fellow, answered the man in black. I hate to die.
What great. A great, that might be my favorite
Which is
scene.
In both.
Uh-huh. Might be my favorite scene in the whole movie, which I'm not in the minority there.
Oh, of course.
Oh, no. I mean, definitely the work put in to make it that way. Here's all the ones that are listed in the front of Carrie Ellis's book called As You Wish.
As You Wish.
Inconceivable Tales of the Making of the Princess Bride. He just has a good list of quotes.
Yes,
so
yes.
So when you're ready,
yes,
I will read the famous quotes.
Of course.
From the movie, not
from
the book.
Right. Rest. So welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. We are recording this on Christmas Eve. So for those who, I mean, it's coming out afterwards, so I guess Merry
It'll Christmas. Be coming out New Year's Eve, right?
New Year's Eve, yes.
Woo!
Welcome to our last episode of 2022 and the rejuvenated run of the Radcast.
Yeah.
So we were so happy to bring it back, and we're so happy that we had such a fruitful 2022.
Yes.
We were able to bring you some great shows, and we are unbelievably excited for 2023.
And, you know, as you heard Samantha's on the show, her episode, her ramble is the most downloaded episode we've had since coming back.
Yep.
That's why, y'all.
Y'all.
Listen to that episode to know what we're referencing.
Yeah, but why not end the year with our most downloaded guest?
Yes.
I believe, aren't I also... There have been other times where episodes I've done have been
super well received.
Oh yeah, they get out fast too.
That's
they get up there quickly. So
there's something to it.
Yeah. I think it helped. We definitely were dogging Elvis a little bit talking about Hanson.
We had a great time then. But one thing we will not be dogging any
of course,
is a beautiful movie / wonderful book that we have not read, but Samantha has numerous times. She will talk about it. As you have seen,
talk about it so much.
Yes, we are.
The book was much better.
All right.
We're capping off 2022 to celebrate the 35th anniversary of The Princess Bride.
The movie. Next year, the book will be 50.
Right. The movie. The 35th anniversary of The Princess Bride. The movie. The more, I would argue, the more well-known of the two.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And phenomenal. When I say the book was much better, I'm
being
pretentious.
Yes.
But it is better, but... The movie's amazing.
The movie,
it's a classic.
Easily in my top 10.
Mm-hmm. I really have two movies that have retained a place as favorite movies. Others have come and gone. It's this one and Strictly Ballroom. But this one, just every stinking time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's I would say it's probably then my top favorite movie tied with Strictly Ballroom. My number one favorite book. My second favorite book is A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle. My third is Le Petit Prince, The Little Prince.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, yeah.
That's probably tied with the Anne of Green Gables series.
Yeah.
But, like, as far as readability, read over and over and over again, yeah. I've not read any book as much as I've, as many times. Yeah. In fact, I very rarely reread books. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many out there that sure. I want. Well, when I was younger, it was because there were so many I wanted to read. Now mm-hmm. it's because I'm tired.
Gotcha. Right.
And I yeah. don't read as many
yeah.
books.
Yeah.
And so for me to reread something I've already read says a lot.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. while saying I've read the book maybe 6 or 7 times doesn't sound like a lot, it actually is for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I don't reread. This is a 500 page book.
Yeah.
Or a 6, maybe more. It's. Okay, well,
yeah.
I don't know. No, that's... Okay, it doesn't matter. But it's
yeah.
very
but
long.
Still, but still, real, yeah. Well, yeah. And I'm glad in your top three is yeah. a French book because my favorite is actually a French book, and it's called Doudou de Très Bébé. Yeah.
That is not a book.
No, it's not.
It was a one-hit wonder from a child... French singer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which but means it's tough Jordy. Being a baby.
Yeah,
French.
Jordy.
Les enfants aux gens de poche.
Yeah.
The small like, change of the babies.
De
très bébé. You remember that. Oh,
oh yeah.
My
God. It's one of those things that's burrowed in my brain. De très bébé.
I have not. I have
oh,
not.
Nah,
I have
nah,
not.
Baby.
Have oh, my God. I'm going to look that up later. I haven't heard that in ages.
That memory is not flushed on une toilette. it's up there with my un jambon and un poulet. Dinners.
All that French. All that French.
You know how long I've been waiting to just make that stupid reference? We're talking years to find the right application.
You barely squeaked it in because
yeah.
mm-hmm. it's clear you knew that wasn't
yep.
a book.
Yep.
Like, so... But I guess I shouldn't have outed you like that because others don't know that you knew.
That's true.
That's
right. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Princess Bride was a book. It became
it's
a beautiful.
It's still a book.
It
didn't stop being a book.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
2022 needs to end stat.
But The Princess Bride
yes.
was a book first, of course, became a wonderful movie.
Yes.
And it my love has grown for it after
yes.
after listening to the Cary Elwes book, who
There's
is Wesley in this
never
As You Wish.
A bad, nobody has the closest anyone comes to having had a bad experience with anything Princess Bride is Wallace Shawn.
Yeah,
and
I was
it
surprised.
Has it doesn't
it's
he's
more
even
like
clear.
Insecurity,
it doesn't
yeah.
have anything to do with the other people.
Right.
It all had to do with his own anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because somebody somewhere told him that Rob Reiner originally wanted Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
And
right.
Rob Reiner's like, no,
yeah.
I only ever wanted
yeah.
Wallace Shawn.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not Sicilian.
He's like,
so
he's like,
that's the point.
He's like, Wally, like, Fazzini sounds like you.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
you are Fazzini.
Yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and he was always so, that's the thing. So, and I think, you know, if you were to even think now about who would play what, like, there is no one to play several of these roles, like, you're just like, nobody could ever do that. It was mm-hmm. almost in the same sense that there's just this sense when you listen to them talk in that book mm-hmm. and other times. I mean, like, they say these things in other interviews.
Mm-hmm.
You don't
yeah.
have to have read the book. In fact, in both of these editions, there's different introductions with little extra bits about this is how we did this process
right.
or whatever, having to do with the movie.
Right.
But, like, over and over, there's sort of this sense, it's like a once-in-a-lifetime, almost magical sort of,
yeah.
like, Rob Reiner goes on, just for everybody's, like, there's only one person that could have played this person.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, it was this, and just such a clear sort of, and, you know, and William Goldman talking about how, like, this is his favorite thing he ever did, and he didn't want to mm-hmm. give it away to anybody
yeah,
to do,
right.
and, you know, and, like, just over and over, just there's something about this that was just... magical and
mm-hmm.
it's one of those things where you're like, if you don't think there's some kind of providential thing weaving the universe together,
yeah.
when you listen to these people talk, you're
yeah.
like, geez, wow,
yeah,
it's almost as if there's something out there weaving together this
yeah.
beautiful story and bringing
mm-hmm.
all these people
yeah
you know together at just the right is such a time
yeah.
as this. You were meant for such a time as this.
It's that's why it feels everyone is so perfectly cast,
mm-hmm.
which is what
mm-hmm.
lends itself to
yeah.
this movie. Just
mm-hmm.
always being good, feeling
all
like
the, just so
it so checks tight. All the so boxes all of like high adventure, of romance, of comedy. Like that's why you feel so satisfied watching it, because it does all those things well because of the cast and the way that the subject matter and the material was treated with such reverence and with such detail and such intention.
Because there was
such intention.
There was this genuine love and affection for not just everybody with one another, but for the source material.
For the story, for its source material.
From the very beginning, before they even started shooting anything, Rob Reiner had such a love for the book.
Yeah.
And again, William Goldman was so apprehensive because he was jaded by the movie industry because several of his works had already been adapted and things that were good.
He was also a very famous screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
He was more prolific as a screenwriter than as an author.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing that helped is he's the one, man, you gotta read the book. We'll talk about it. I'm not gonna get started on the book right now because it'll take us way off track. I have so many things to say about it. But William Goldman, and this is pretty unusual, but he was entirely responsible for writing the screenplay adaptation of his novel that he wrote. And as someone who's read the novel many times, it's just amazing how he was able to leave out so much that's in the book and yet seem to have left nothing out.
Right.
And so I don't know. There's just something about this that's just sort of perfect.
And it's great because a lot of people who did the movie had read the book. Not just Rob Reiner. Chris Sarandon, Cary Elwes grew up reading it. I think Christopher Guest said he had read the book. Mm-hmm. So many people were familiar with it, but also familiar with the fact that it was a hard movie to make.
Mm.
Like a lot of, like there were three or four different directors who were kind of tabbed to kind of try to touch
some
it.
Pretty big deal directors.
Yeah, Robert
Redford,
Truffaut.
Yeah.
But then like Rob Reiner wanted to make it, but he knew like a headache that it would be. So like when he wanted to take it on, he knew what he wanted to do to honor William Goldman's novel, to honor the story itself, because he had such love for it. So that's why when Samantha said there were really only, to Rob Reiner, really only three people that he needed to cast, that if he wasn't able to cast them, they weren't going to make it.
It wasn't going to work.
That's Cary Elwes as Wesley,
Andre the Giant,
or Andre the Giant as Fezzik, and Robin Wright as Buttercup.
Yeah. Yep.
He knew the book and the source material so well. He knew the descriptions of the characters. He's like, it has to be these people.
Yeah.
Right.
And definitely Andre the Giant was like,
because
Goldman was a huge Andre the Giant fan.
Yeah.
So he wrote the character Fezzik in the book with Andre the Giant in mind.
Yep.
At least that's what I've heard, like Cary Elwes saying, Rob Reiner say.
Well, I think that might be dubious. I know that he really wanted him for the movie.
Right.
Right.
And you'd be really tempted to believe that to be true because there's so much about Fezzik's backstory that has a kinship to Andre's life.
Yeah.
That it'd be easy to think that that is indeed true.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, for sure. But before we get any further, because it's also not only is it a beautiful movie that we'll expound more upon, it's also a highly quotable one. And I know there's something you've been sitting on from Cary Elwes's As You Wish book that we wanted to delve into. Yeah. But first,
our sister Samantha Kennedy is back.
Samantha Kennedy is back.
I'm here.
So she is here. This is four for her. So in 2023, she will be joining the Five Timers Club. Yep. So we are very excited for
but
that.
But this is did we mention?
It's podcast eight of Samantha. Yeah. So that's cool.
If you bring in that stint on Sucktastic.
So Princess Bride released October 9th, 1987. So just a couple months out of its 35th anniversary in the movie. Directed by Rob Reiner, starring Cary Elwes as Wesley, Robin Wright as Buttercup, Mandy Patinkin as Inigo Montoya,
Andre the Giant as Fezzik, Chris Sarandon as Prince Humperdinck, Christopher Guest as Count Rugen, Wallace Shawn as Vicini, Fred Savage as the grandson, and Peter Falk as the grandfather, with Billy Crystal as Miracle Max, mm-hmm. Carol Kane as Valerie, Mel Smith as the albino, and Peter Cook as the clergyman,
yeah.
with a box office of $30.9 million on a $16 million budget. And just to stay in touch with everything else we do with movies, here's what was on the VHS.
Please.
So there were three VHS openings on YouTube. One of them was a 1998 release. Mm-hmm. One of them was a 1999 release, which looks like the 1998 one. And one of them is the 1988 release.
Okay, so when it first came out.
So either 98 or 99 was definitely like the clamshell VHS case that I remember owning when we were kids. It's a commercial for the All Dogs Go to Heaven Activity Center computer game. Next,
which by the fact, you'll know there's a bonus episode where we talk a little bit of theology, but my theology is all dogs do indeed go to heaven, mm-hmm. and I will fight you tooth and nail.
Yes.
Because why not?
Well, no, it's not just why not. Like, I have a very nice, long theological explanation for why I think dogs go to heaven.
Okay.
We're not going to do it now.
Sure. Right.
But just know if someone's upset about that, then I'll write you a nice little paragraph.
Yes.
And if you don't like it, fine. I don't care.
That's
okay. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah, exactly. I spoke my piece. Exactly. That's a very hard reality that as you get older, just because you don't like something doesn't make it not true.
Right.
Yeah. Just because it's not your truth doesn't mean it's not someone else's truth.
Exactly.
But also there are certain truths that are indisputable, and one of them is that
all dogs go to heaven. Exactly. next is an advertisement for Babes in Toyland, a CD-ROM game. Now, the 1999 one had a montage of MGM family movies.
Yeah, they didn't know what to do with themselves.
Yes.
It's like a montage.
And then the 1988
VHS. There's lots of montages in the
90s. Yes. Yeah.
The 1988 VHS, there's a short bumper for a message after the feature from Comic Relief 87. So the HBO charity comedic stand-up event that Billy Crystal, Whoopi Goldberg, Robin Williams.
Yeah, I thought they were going to say the Comic Relief of the movie Billy Crystal.
He's not the only.
I know. That's
literally
where,
everybody.
If it had said that, I would have that would have been an indisputable truth.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Or I guess not. Anyway.
I just keep going.
But the little message at the end of that VHS is it's advertising the 1987 Comic Relief special on HBO.
Okay,
and one of the things it included was a montage of acts performing at Comic Relief interspliced with footage of homeless people done to Living in America by James Brown.
Oh my
God. So it's a little strange, some
of
the clips it chose to
use. I get it that on paper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What they were trying to do there, but I can imagine so many ways that goes
swing
wrong.
And a miss.
That almost feels like a satire of
like the Simpsons.
Sounds like something SNL or the Simpsons would do.
Performative activism, and aren't we great? And here's the real reality, and we're gonna play an uber patriotic song. Aren't we great?
Yeah, exactly. It was only like 15 seconds, but the irony was not lost on
sure.
me.
Sure.
Princess Bride, as we kind of got into a little bit already, before we get to how highly quotable it is and read some of the more famous quotes Cary Elwes showcases, I want to ask you, Samantha, your history with the movie, because you already made clear it's pretty much tied for the top spot with Strictly Ballroom.
Yeah.
When was the first time you ever saw Princess Bride?
So actually, I do remember. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't tell you the year, but I was quite young because I was scared of the R-O-U-S's.
Right.
Oh,
And so I remember the first time I saw it, Dad was like, come on, it's a good movie. It's okay. It's not real, you know. Like, he was trying to get me to come in and watch the movie, and I remember we were exposed to Willow around the same time. I'm about 85% certain this was before you guys were born, but not 100%
sure. Right.
So, but I would leave the room when the ROUSs would come on and just sort of like listen and peek around.
Yeah.
I remember, so like imagine, so the house that we grew up in for their listeners is. Our grandparents owned that house.
Yeah.
They, after our parents and us moved out of it when I was, I guess, 18. So I didn't live in the house they live in now for very long, but you guys did.
Yeah.
So imagine that dining room
yeah.
and just kind of peeking around that little wall.
Yeah.
oh, is the ROUS part over?
Right.
So, I mean, I was definitely, so when did that come out? 80, did we say 85?
87.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I probably saw it when it was, so I had to have been first or second grade, something sure. like that. Mm-hmm. So this would have been a couple years, probably about when it was released on VHS.
Yeah.
Cable, but I, and maybe. Cable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 90, 91. Uh-huh. So maybe you were babies.
Gotcha.
But, sure. but yeah, I mean, yeah. this was like, you wouldn't have been
right.
watching it. When
yeah.
was, so I probably would have been 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. The first time I saw it.
Yeah.
And I just remember I was like, oh, I don't, why do we have to watch this movie? I don't like it when Dad watches this movie. There's yeah. ROUSs and
yeah.
blah, 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 blah. And I also remember the trolls in Willow being yeah. scarier.
Yeah. yeah.
And when we watched it, so after your episode with Andy, I was mm-hmm. like, oh, man, I spent ages since I've watched Willow. I want to go mm-hmm. home and watch Willow. Mm-hmm. And the trolls to me were not that scary anymore. I remembered
yeah.
them
yeah.
being grosser or something. Yeah. I think it was just because I was a kid.
Sure.
The same thing with the ROUSs is like, they look nasty, but they're yeah. not. And so, yeah, it's clearly like when you're a kid,
mm-hmm.
that's really scary mm-hmm. and startling. So, yeah, I mean, probably 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I mean, Malcolm's age, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Malcolm or Ben's age. Mm-hmm.
And then so, you yeah. got the VHS. Probably, I don't know when you got the VHS. I remember,
but you remember
I
it?
Remember
yeah.
your
okay.
VHS yes. copy. And if the one that
so
I'm thinking you had,
maybe?
Yeah, it was like 98, then, you know, well, it's in and around that time.
So wait, are you talking about the copy of the book that we have sitting here?
I'm thinking of the VHS copy of the movie.
So yeah, I may have been in high school because mm-hmm. we still did it was like a, When did DVDs start becoming like the
that
replacement?
Like, really,
like for 2000. Everything.
2000, because they've yeah. been around okay. since like 97, 98.
Yeah.
But
well,
really
right.
became the
but like the replacement.
Yeah, like
for
2000.
VHS.
2000.
Yeah, 2000.
Okay, so I still like would have been in high school.
Okay. Yeah.
I graduated in 01. Mm-hmm. I tell you, my coworker was born the year that I graduated high school.
Really,
interesting. My coworker Julia, she doesn't seem like she's that young,
sure.
but she is. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It just kind of makes me laugh to be like, Julia, like, there's geez. A whole adult person between us.
This is so weird yeah. for me.
But yeah. I remember
but yeah.
Us like first watching it from that VHS that you owned.
I mean, then probably I was in high school and then you would have been in elementary school, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. yeah.
I don't, I'm trying, you guys just remember the years better. I used to, my mind used to be like yours.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But then I had to start remembering things to do with my children and I
yeah.
just
of course.
Cannot.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't think I'm not going to be like those nuns that never get dementia because all they do is read. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm going to have dementia in like 4 years.
Your brain surrendered to a more noble cause.
Yes.
Remembering years.
I mean, it's a different cause.
Sure. Yes.
More noble.
More noble. I don't know.
So
just different.
It's like an ego.
This is noble, sir.
Just try not to laugh.
But you do, unlike us, and I remember you have more of a familiarity. You're more familiar with the book.
It's like shift, change gears yeah, here. Yeah.
You are
just
very,
use a word I can use.
Yeah.
You are very familiar with the
I
book.
I am very familiar with the book. I am.
But the movie itself, highly quotable. So let's get
yes.
to As You Wish. Cary Elwes released it 10 years
which
ago
which I have
now.
Not read, but you guys have
yeah.
read
I
it.
Mean, here,
so
well,
I
mean, here's
it didn't feel as bad.
No. Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. Like, I definitely just listen to it. It's more
yeah.
interesting because
that's what I do now anyway for
there,
most books.
There are things in it that I hadn't heard before, but not a ton. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And I mean, Cary Elwes is no Bill Goldman.
Sure.
But it's entertaining.
Oh, yeah. He's great with accents.
And
too.
He's he's so amazing with accents.
He's awesome.
But then they also get people, they also get like Rob Reiner,
yeah,
Bustin,
yeah. Rob Reiner,
and,
Robin Wright,
yeah,
yeah.
Chris
Listen,
Sarandon. Audiobooks are my preferred method now.
That's
especially
kinda
if the
where
author's
I am
doing
too,
it.
Because
yeah.
I have to, my body, I have trouble keeping still
yeah.
more now than I used to. And
sure.
so the audiobook, it's like, oh, I can get up and do
yeah.
things, I can fidget, I can fiddle,
yeah.
whereas
mm-hmm.
I can't, with a book I have
yeah.
to like look at, except there are some books where, so this is one book that's an exception for several reasons. One, because it's just that kind of book. And mm-hmm. two, because the...
As You Wish?
Oh,
or
I'm sorry.
The Princess
Bride.
Bride.
No,
okay,
As You Wish.
Gotcha.
The audiobook of The Princess Bride is a big disappointment. It's abridged, and Rob Reiner does not do as much like acting when he reads it as I had hoped he would.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And in fact, they took in the abridgment, they like most of my favorite book lines are gone. I mean, I guess if you don't know any better, then
then it's like, whatever.
It's more than what's in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's, I do know better.
But I do.
You think I don't know a crap ton about The Princess Bride, but I do. Which is a callback to the last time I was on when we quoted
Nacho Libre.
Nacho Libre's, people think I don't know a crap ton about the gospel, but I do.
I love that movie. Anyway.
So here's some of the famous lines they list in the book. Right. It's the only reason I brought the book is... It's not because I didn't like the book.
Of course.
I'm not dogging on the book.
No,
sure,
of course
not. I'm
just
saying there's a lot of the stories can be found other places. And so what I was trying to say is it's not like we've got all this information that you don't.
Yeah. Sure. No, no,
and so it's not like we're going to be like, it's all
these stories you can find on featurettes that are that are put in one spot, which is nice.
Right.
So I can't believe I forgot my, you've seen my coffee mug that Brian Cool got me 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, my name is Inigo Montoya. You took my coffee, prepared to die. Mm-hmm. No, it's like the name tag.
Hello, my name is.
Right. That's a big, you can get a lot of things with the hello, my name is. And then it's Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepared to die. But he got me, you took my coffee, prepared to die, which I frigging love.
Yeah.
But I say that because we should say this line together. The single most famous line, I would say, in the whole movie, which is,
hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Of course.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. The line that Manny Patinkin says he gets like two or three times a day for like the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of Manny Patinkin, I got a real thing for early 2000s Manny Patinkin.
Okay.
So not for middle-aged Manny Patinkin.
Okay. Middle-aged Manny Patinkin.
So not young Mandy from The Princess Bride and not old like old guy Mandy now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, a little.
Middle-aged Mandy.
But middle-aged Mandy via Dead Like Me and just other things he did.
Elmo and Grouchland.
Yeah.
Yeah, Elmo and Grouchland, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obvi.
Yeah. The frequent viewer of that movie. Yeah.
I've actually never seen that. But Tyler, I want to now that I know he's in it.
Yep.
I have very strange tastes.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's very, but I think 2000s Mandy Patinkin, and I'm like, yeah, I'd hit that.
What a cool guy. Oh, okay. All right.
I don't hit anything.
Yeah, but I hit that.
It's just a fun thing. Yeah. It's just a fun thing to say.
I don't hit anything. I'm not interested in hitting
Except
anything.
Except my children. Yeah, back.
Exactly.
Not
only
really.
When they need
I
it.
I didn't pull dad ass.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't talk like that.
Exactly.
So another really famous one. This is a Wallace Shawn.
Inconceivable. But you got to say it with a lisp.
Inconceivable.
Yeah.
Which, of course, later, it's not in here, but Inigo says to him, I do not think
you keep using that word.
I do not think it means what you think it means.
Which I use of several, like the people use the word iconic so much. It's like, you keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
Yeah, exactly. And you just used an iconic line to show them.
Exactly.
Or ironic.
This is called. Okay.
It's layers. It's layers.
It's
I have
layers. There's layers. Yeah.
Ogres
layers.
Have layers.
Yeah.
Anybody want a peanut?
Anybody want a peanut?
Ah! Back the whole rhyme. It's like, you're very good. You have, what does it say? You have a gift for rhyming.
Yeah. It's actually in even more. So if you permit me later, and you edit it how you want, but I wanted to read you Fezzik's backstory.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would love to read you both Fezzik and Inigo because I firmly believe that while I wouldn't think anyone should attempt to make another movie of The Princess Bride with I think Inigo and Fezzik either deserve their own movie as a pair or the three, you know, criminals or whatever, or just an Inigo movie and a Fezzik movie because there's some really beautiful and sad.
Yeah.
And
this is like a medieval buddy cop movie, kind of.
I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I mean, that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone out there with power listening?
Anybody want a peanut? Huh?
I don't want to write it because y'all Hollywood today is even worse and they tear the shit out of it.
It could be like a cartoon, like an animated movie, or it's a cartoon series about Inigo and Fezzik. Anyway, I don't know. Now that we've mentioned it, my creative mind juices is are rolling,
Okay. This one, which was not in the book because it was a lot of those funny lines were created by Carol Kane and
and Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal. Miracle Max and his wife are in the book.
Sure.
But none of those iconic lines are because they ad-libbed.
Oh, yeah.
Have fun storming the castle.
Have fun. Bye-bye, boys.
Bye-bye.
I'm on the Brute Squad. You're on the Brute Squad.
Yeah. Never get involved in a land war in Asia, which is a sly reference to Vietnam War and Korean War, which how could he have known about that in the 1600s?
Right, exactly.
I love the anachronisms are wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
When all these devices, when done properly by an artist.
Yeah. I was going to say, because it doesn't strike you as an anachronism if you don't know that's what they're referencing.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's just random enough to where you're like, that's really funny.
Well, and it's a poke at, there's a ton of anachronisms in the book because the framing device that he uses. Mm-hmm. But it's there for comedic purposes. And it's the kind of thing that somebody has to be really skilled to pull it off, because you see people try and do anachronistic, what is it, Knight's Tale.
We Will Rock You, yes.
Yeah, which I loved the concept, but you have to really, you just gotta handle that stuff with care.
You have to have some sort of, like, some sort of wit and cleverness.
There needs to be, they talked over and over again in the book, and you hear this, lots of comedians say it, that like comedy is serious business. So you don't advertise the audience. This is comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
They are like, everybody played it straight.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because Bill Goldman's writing of not just the book, but of the script as well. It's like, listen, it's funny enough. All you have to do is
just deliver it.
Try and be funny.
Yeah.
Just be Wesley or whomever.
This itself is fun. I could go all day about the intricacies of comedy.
Yeah.
But play
the characters as earnest and play the characters with earnest. Yeah.
And then it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And Ernest will come and he will help.
Yeah, exactly.
Ernest saves the Princess Bride. You know what I mean?
Which it needed it because, and it shocks, it baffles me that the studio didn't know how to sell it, because so many movies these days are like that. And they probably owe it to the Princess Bride.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
But so many movies have that sort of like non-genre that's hard to, like, and nobody has any problem selling it now because it's so common now.
Yeah.
But in 86 or whatever, for some reason, people were baffled as to
how
do we sell this? And so it while it made back its money and it was a critical sort of darling at festivals, like,
it didn't help
to the wider
audience that the one sheet they got was it's kind of iconic now, but it's kind of the whimsical background, but it's silhouettes of Fred Savage and Peter Falk, and Peter Falk reading to Fred Savage and it says The Princess Bride. So you can tell how it would be confusing to people.
Time traveling grandpa and his grandson.
Yeah. So that's why it gained new life when it became more accessible to people, or it was shown to people at like colleges or festivals. Then
like,
they saw the appeal.
This is so great.
Or it gained new life on VHS because people actually,
as really most things.
Yeah.
Do.
A lot of things in the VHS boom, things gain new life. Like The Lost Boys, like we were talking about in October.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, it was definitely more style than substance, but the acting was so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Despite the movie being so bad, I'm talking about The Lost Boys.
Okay. Oh, yeah. The acting was great.
The acting was, I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Where the acting all around was so good that it made a terrible movie not terrible.
Right.
I've seen people's great actors floundering in terrible movies being the bright spot of that movie. I've seen bad actors mess up good writing, but damn, I was really surprised. I was like, I'll never watch this again. Once is enough.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But hella entertained. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So life is pain. Highness, anyone who says differently is selling something.
Yep.
Now, in the book, that line is there, but Wesley's not the one that delivers it.
Right.
Buttercup's parents are.
Oh, okay.
So in fact, Buttercup's parents are more like the, like their relationship is like Miracle Max and his wife in the mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah.
So that bit of spat type
yeah.
thing
yeah.
or whatever. Rest well and dream of large women.
Yeah. Rest well and dream yes. of large women.
After he chokes out Fezzik.
Yeah.
Yes. Get used to disappointment. Some of these are much
yeah.
better.
Yeah.
Like in if you don't know the context.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Who? Yeah.
No one of consequence.
Yeah. The,
I must know.
Like if you were to just write, who are you? You're yeah. like, oh, okay. He's like, he's inquisitive, but yeah. it's the no. way that Manny Patinkin delivers yeah.
well,
it.
I, well,
as
I love... you need the surrounding lines,
yes.
the context.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when Wesley says, get used to disappointment and Inigo, his reaction is Manny Patinkin in the moment being like, all right.
Like
shrugging.
Yeah.
All right.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
yeah.
So that's, and just on Manny Patinkin, you mm. talked about your affection for Manny Patinkin, rightfully so.
Yeah.
One of my favorite reactions, because I love watching Robin Wright in general, but
yeah.
I love
her as a young
yeah,
boy growing up.
My
yeah.
Lord, she's still, I mean, yes, yeah, she's probably had a little bit of pinchy pinch
well,
just
sure.
to keep things tight,
but
that's her face.
When
yeah.
when listening to everybody be so smitten with her and just how cool of
yeah.
a person she seemed
her
like she
and Gary
was,
Ellis
I was
were like,
I was
a
like,
thing.
Well, listening to that, I was yeah. like, Jesus Christ, how do you not put a ring on it?
I know, I couldn't help but think.
Yeah,
like,
I was
why
watching
did they
it,
end
and I was
up
like,
together?
I was like, why didn't this happen?
Yeah.
If ever I'm lucky enough to encounter
yeah.
someone like that, I'm like, I would marry you right on the spot.
Yeah.
Because that you she and she's it seems like she hasn't lost it with age. I mean, she's still beautiful, but also like someone who is so cool.
Yeah.
Someone who has an ear for accents. Someone who is
married Sean Penn.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
that's my thing. I was like,
Spicoli?
It's like you wasted so much of your life married to Sean Penn.
It's true. Yeah.
It's like, what was it? But anyway, when listening to Robin, I love listening to Robin Wright's view of it. I've loved listening
yeah.
to Cary Elwes,
mm-hmm.
who's one of the more prominent voices championing
yeah.
the
yeah,
movie.
Because yeah.
he's like the face of it essentially.
Yeah.
I love listening to Rob Reiner. I love listening to Chris Sarandon and all talk about it. Manny Patinkin's hit me in a way to where I was like, that is so poetic because mm. Manny
he's
Patinkin,
just so
he's
that's why I have a thing for
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
So he's introspective and verbose.
Yeah.
And
one of my
yeah.
favorite he tells a story to where
listen, he's a theater person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He was very clear, like he's not much for watching movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He is a solid theater guy.
There's a specific
and so
approach.
He has this
yeah.
very
yeah.
this aura about him and the way he taught. And that's when I fell in love with him was when I saw an interview like 20 years ago or something about The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just he like was getting teary eyed
yeah.
and the things that he said. And I was like,
and
yeah. then I heard him sing
oh.
because
yeah.
he's a stage
yeah.
and musical. And I was like, oh.
I drove all night to get to you. I said,
like,
all right, to make love to you. Girls
yeah, so
want to have fun.
Yeah,
Manny Patinkin, I freaking
yeah.
love.
He sings the catalog of Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah.
Anyway,
what?
Manny
no, not
sings.
Really.
And it's,
Manny
and
sings
it's a CD.
And Manny
yeah.
sings Cyndi.
But I really yeah. want this to be real.
Yeah, yeah
it's not.
it's not.
But he in interviews he's done. They were all invited to watch a rough cut of it, and he was with his wife, and at the end, he was weeping, and she was like, what's wrong? He's
what's
like,
the matter with you?
it's Peter Falk.
Yeah.
So
what's the matter with you? What the hell's his problem?
but he was telling her, he's...
Sorry.
I'll let you get the giggles out.
I'm sorry.
Imagining Manny Patinkin married to Peter Falk, who was like wearing a wig.
Yeah,
but just like a lady version.
But he's
of
still got a
stogie
and like the pork pie hat.
Yeah. His lazy right eye.
Yeah.
But he's like, there's a dress and a blonde wig.
Yeah, please, you're embarrassing yourself.
I'm sorry, Steven. Go ahead.
I'm fine.
Okay.
Fine.
But he looked at her and he said, "I could never dream that I would ever be in something so beautiful."
Yeah. Like
it is
beautiful.
It is, and even now, whenever people whenever he describes his experience with fans and people quoting things back to him, he starts off by saying, "And whenever they reference that thing that I just can't believe that I was in." I look at it and I'm like, "How is that me?"
Yeah,
quoting something I said that.
Yeah,
he's like it's more beautiful than anything I could have dreamed I could have been a part of. It was a highlight of my life.
Yeah.
And it just, I love listening to him say that, because I think I said it earlier that listening to Cary Elwes and the As You Wish book and watching people talk about the movie and how much joy was put into it, how much earnest and how much love was put into it.
You can feel it.
Exactly. It's palpable. Yeah. It makes the movie more beautiful for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. I don't remember what I was going to say.
Hmm. You talk about Peter Falk.
I know. I distracted myself. But just every time I watch the, and if you're listening to this, you've seen
the
movie.
Yeah.
Like anyone who.
And if you haven't, please go watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
What's wrong with you?
But it's just unbelievable. The swordplay in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's all them, except for the acrobatics is all them.
Which I didn't realize during it. It wasn't until I watched it last night with captions on that, when Wesley, as he's Dread Pirate Robert Steve Brule,
the man in black.
Yeah, the man in black. When they're doing, the fencing, when they're talking to each other, they're saying fencing terms.
Yeah,
I didn't realize until
techniques,
I was
capoeira.
When he says when I was a
kid,
when I was a kid, he's like,
we talking about Greek Roman history?
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't realize until I had the captions on, and I was like, wait, are these fencing terms?
Yeah,
and then because it really didn't the fencing aspect, because I always knew about the sword fight, but just the emphasis on just the sport of fencing.
Mm-hmm.
They worked for months, nonstop, grueling.
Yeah.
To get that.
It's one of the biggest pieces of trivia too, is that and you watch it and that it's still, I still never tire of that scene. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this movie so many times. I'm still like, God, that's just so impressive. And that's them.
Well, what's funny is they got so proficient at the choreography that when they were setting up the rehearsal to set up the blocking for the scene and to do it for Rob Reiner, they were done, and Mandy and Carrie were both proud of what they did, and their teachers and their instructors were super proud of them. But they finished it in a minute and a half.
Yeah, he's it's gotta be longer.
And Rob Reiner and Carrie's book, Carrie references, he's like, "Is that it?" And they're like,
"Yeah."
They're essentially they look at each other like, "What?" And he asked them to go choreograph,
more.
It would be
it was 4 minutes when they first learned it, but then they got so good at it, that it's down to a minute and a half.
And it just shows the earnest that Rob Reiner and the love he had for what was described in the book and subsequently in the screenplay. He's like, it has to be the greatest sword fight ever seen between the two greatest swordsmen. One of the things that contributed to just the magic of the movie is, again, back to Rob Reiner's connection to it, that when he said he would read it, he understood William Goldman's
voice.
He connected with William Goldman's sentiments.
Yeah.
He connected with the voice. He could hear that, and maybe it's because he was such a big William Goldman fan anyway. Mm-hmm. But when he read it, he connected with William Goldman's sentiments and how he wrote it, and his voice and his narrative style.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think it's also great that Rob Reiner was the one who made it, because I think he sold William Goldman, because he said the things that in a way could connect with William Goldman.
Like, Goldman could tell this guy gets it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Reiner had just come off of a bunch of hits.
Mm-hmm.
He was gold
at
the time. And a studio or somebody had said, well, we'll pay for you to do anything you
want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said, I want to do this.
Yeah. And they're like, anything but that.
And then they're like, anything but that. And he's like, nope.
But he
this
got,
is yeah. it.
So he got Norman Lear, who he's friends with.
Yeah, yeah. And then the method in which, like, just a testament to his conviction and wanting it to be the best thing possible is the method in which he got Andre the Giant to get his lines down.
I love that story.
Yeah, like he would record.
Okay, boss.
Yeah, okay, him and his creative partner would like, they would record the scenes that Andre's in, and Rob Reiner doing Andre's lines, and Andre would just have headphones and just like walking around in rehearsal and stuff like that, just committing it to memory. And then that teamed with,
because English was not his first language, and he wasn't even apparently that strong in his English.
Right.
And his French accent was very heavy, mixed with the depth of his voice.
Yeah. And he didn't really have to do much talk. Like, he cut promos and stuff, but he was an attraction, just him himself. He didn't have to cut a promo to convince you to come in the building. All you had to do was look at him.
Yeah.
And so
with wrestling. I know
with
I don't have to specify.
Right.
But
yeah. But like, I don't know. I feel like, especially if you were a wrestling fan at that time, you see a different side of Andre the Giant in this. And I don't remember, this was 80, this came out in 87, so this was around 86. WrestleMania 3 when this came out.
I mean, he was a big deal, but it sounds like his body had started to get to him.
Yeah.
And so he couldn't even do a lot of the like the carrying or the that scene where he slams Wesley against the rock. That's not even him in that scene.
No.
Yeah. A lot of harnessing done, a lot of having to lower Robin Wright into his arms because he couldn't catch her.
Because he couldn't carry weight. He needed to have surgery.
And this was like, and Rob Reiner in the Andre the Giant documentary says that like the term gentle giant like applied to nobody better than like Andre the Giant because, and plus just so many stories of him like on set
just across the board.
Yeah, it was some of the best times of his life.
Amazing person.
Exactly. And people just looked at him like a person. Like they weren't like gawking at him or anything. And so just that adds to my love of the movie is that even the culture on the set was like, you're one of us.
Everybody loved him.
Yeah.
There's this, you know, sort of this idea of like what we've come to call pastors or actually business managers. And that it's someone with a real shepherding, I prefer to call it like a shepherding gift. A gift, a pastor would be someone who has a gift of shepherding, someone who can come alongside people and talk and lead and help them, you know, lean and be better and all this stuff. Or there's other stuff. This is not what we're talking about right now. But I told Brian, I said, after listening about Rob Reiner and hearing about the kind of person he is, I was like, damn, Rob Reiner is what a pastor should be. Like, so he, I mean, just like, it was always the other people first. And just sounds like he is one of those like diamond in the rough in Hollywood kind of people, like genuinely cared about others and treated everybody like kind and gentle and was encouraging of his actors and was always like, no, you know, just be you. You're perfect for this. You're blah, 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 all this stuff. And it was just like, I was amazed. I was like, I think I'd like to just meet Rob Reiner as a person.
Yeah,
and just like know him as a person. Yeah. Like, he's apparently this very positive and like good, bringing good things into the world kind of person.
Jovial person.
Yeah.
Who like they just the first, it made me just adore Rob Reiner as a person because he just sounds like such a sweet man and definitely someone you would want to work for.
Yeah, because he works with.
Yeah, because he works with you.
Yeah.
You know, but just the fact that he would, especially with Miracle Max stuff, would ruin takes because his laugh was so big.
He just
so
enjoyed
booming.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. And like in Manny Patinkin, like he didn't get hurt on set besides trying to stifle his laughter during the Miracle Max scenes with Billy Crystal and Carol Kane. And like, I've noticed it for years, but when these like they bring Wesley after he's been on the on Count Rugen's
machine
that like pulls life from you. they bring him to Miracle Max because he's only mostly dead. Yeah, exactly. They bring him back like he's dead. He's like, no, he's mostly dead. But they're trying to convince him to bring him back. Yeah.
Which means
to bluff. And then the way he's like trying to plead with them about a noble cause.
Yeah.
And Manny Patinkin's like, this is very noble.
And he's trying not to laugh.
And it's just like,
because Manny,
boy, you're a bad liar.
Because Manny Patinkin said he tried not laughing because Billy Crystal's just looking at him with this makeup on, makes him look like a mix between Casey Stengel and Billy Crystal's grandma. Like Billy Crystal, that's what he said he wanted his makeup to look like.
Yeah.
And he's just looking at him with this open mouth, gawking look. And
I can't imagine.
Yeah, he said, I can't help but not, like, I'm trying not to laugh. Yeah.
But, like, the runaway performances in the movie, and that's saying something because
there's so many, like
Christopher Guest, who I love his movies.
Chris Sarandon.
If you don't have your health, you have nothing.
Chris Sarandon, who we met in Fright Night, we just sang the praises.
Also seems like a wonderful human being.
Oh yeah, but Chris Sarandon, who this is the first time I saw him, was in this movie.
Please consider me an alternative to suicide.
Yeah, yeah. The way he like scoops his skirt when Wesley tells, he's like, drop your sword.
Oh, you know, the funniest, the biggest sort of differentiation between actor and the way the character is described in the book is Humperdinck.
Yes, and Chris Sarandon's Humperdinck, sorry.
Yeah, Chris Sarandon is Humperdinck. Much for but actors, Humperdinck is, basically he's described as a barrel with barrel legs and barrel arms.
Yeah.
And you don't even really know what that means. It's like, is he fat?
Yeah.
Is he strong?
Does he take on water?
Like yeah, exactly. What do you mean? So, like, whatever it is, it's not Chris Sarandon.
Right.
No.
But it doesn't bother me. I just think that it's interesting that most everybody else, I would say, totally fits the description of them in the book. Well, the Sicilian, but not so much.
But I mean,
that's okay too.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Sarandon just destroys it.
It's
not
amazing.
In a bad way.
No,
it's
like in a great. So he's good. So great. Mm-hmm.
And
everyone's so great.
One thing I noticed is obviously the Man in Black, when the final battle of wits with Vizzini, he's got the Iocane powder and he's like, it is, you know, there is no scent and stuff like that. And it's all. Every time Wesley moves on to the next stage, it's followed by scenes of Count Rugen and Humperdinck and their men tracking Buttercup, and he's sniffing the vial where the Iocane powder came in. He's like, Iocane powder, I'd bet my life on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no scent. So I was like, that's, I don't know if they meant to do that, but that's really funny.
It is really funny. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that was on purpose. I actually didn't notice that. Because in the book, he says, I can't smell anything, so most likely Iocane powder. Mm-hmm. So like,
oh, okay.
Which I think is probably also meant to be a joke, but yeah. I was just like,
I think it's just funny. The comedy injection.
Yeah. Yes. One of the things that makes it so special, and I think kind of has it go over some people's heads, is the humor is, it's so cleverly written, but it's
so dry,
so dry, and it's so tongue-in-cheek.
Which is why it's so great.
That's what multiple viewings helps, too, is like if you realize, oh, that was a joke, it makes you appreciate it more because we said it earlier, it's not winking at the camera. It's not laying out, here's a joke. It's not slapstick. It's not, you know, it's not overtly like comedic, but it is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like with the Vizzini's line about the land war in Asia, which is in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so that's Bill Goldman. It's the kind of thing where it's like you're like watching this, and he's the thing, and then he moves on, and then you're like,
"Wait, what?
A land war in Asia?
Huh?
Vietnam?
Yeah. Wait.
But wait a minute. That's really, and then all of a sudden you're like, "Oh,
that's hilarious.
That's a joke. Next time I watch it, I'm gonna laugh." When he says it.
Yeah,
exactly. But it was one of those, they're thinkers, but they're like super smart.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that's good.
They let you do the work as the audience, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I do too.
And one of my favorite things too is, just to get back to Rob Reiner, Carol Kane says in the book, Carol Kane's fantastic.
She's so amazing.
Carol Kane and Miracle Max, or I say it as if Billy Crystal's name is Miracle Max. Valerie and Miracle Max are in the movie for like five minutes, and they're like one of the best parts.
I mean,
parts.
But it's like, yeah, they're like this quintessential character now at the reunion and all of
that.
Yeah. It's like, I think he said they were on set for like 3 days, and that was it.
Carol Kane said something along the lines of Rob was making a movie that would please him in a particular way, and that's what made it work.
Yeah.
It's because this was a project of love.
Yeah.
For him, and it's shown through with how he treated the kid. I think he would have done this anyway, but it's shown through with how he treated the cast and how the casting and all the movements of the movie were so intentional.
Mm.
And like the way what he wanted to do, everything was so orchestrated and intentional that it shows through as to why it's such a tight movie, to where as a whole, you don't need the book or references from the book to enjoy the movie by itself.
Or to know what's going on. To know what's going on. Any of it.
But and to be such a fan, to know, to understand the source material so well, to know of what you do have to cut or summarize, you know exactly how to do it.
Because
you know what message the book has and what you're trying to portray.
Yeah. And Chris Guest was like, people get asked, did you know it was a hit when you're making it? And he was like, I mean, you never know, really can know.
Yeah.
But what you know is you enjoyed making it. So that was the experience.
Yeah.
This is an episode, and this is a subject with a guest. Speaking of intentionality, it's very intentional to have Samantha on.
Yeah.
Because you're the first one to show us this movie and because of your connection with it.
Yeah.
So, of course, outside of maybe somebody who worked on the movie, we wouldn't have anybody else on
to
do it.
Mm-hmm. And even if we had someone, we still would have had Samantha.
You would have had me to hear, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Get that best boy in here.
Yeah,
there you go.
I am best boy. but there's when taking on something that we love so much and that is so well-beloved, it almost feels like you can't. You're leaving things out.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you can't say enough of it. You want to talk. Like, you want to feel
like, oh, shit, we got to talk about this. We got to talk about this.
You want to feel like you did it justice because not only growing up watching it and loving it and being one of my favorite movies of all time, and all of us share that sentiment around the table, also in the last couple weeks, listening to As You Wish, listening to the work and love that was put into it, watching interviews and putting all that work into thinking about it, I'm like, I love this movie so much more now. So I'm so much more dead set on
like you need to know this about it. And
like
exactly.
Hear all of this
if you don't feel the same way I do, I'm gonna be very disappointed. And you're the one who's wrong, not me.
Yeah, but it's like
see our special addendum on spirituality and mental health.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Surprise!
Yeah.
There's gonna be a little surprise.
There's gonna be a couple bonus episodes tacked onto here. But it's just one of those things where. For me, I want to listen to it and be satisfied in knowing that I did it justice.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I love it so much.
Yeah.
And maybe if someone on the movie hears it.
Yeah.
But
I mean, like half of them are dead, so
it's true.
But there's a good half that are still
there's
alive.
Most of the actors are still alive.
Yeah.
So
it's just the characters who
are dead. One of those things where it's
never
mind. But it's so ridiculous. It's a testament to how enduring the movie is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not one of those things that was a cult classic. In a way, things that just end up gaining new life on VHS could be considered that.
Sure.
But I think the popularity and the significance of the movie kind of raises it above
cult classic.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's just classic.
No, and that's what
it
I'm getting at.
It just got there late.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that it's so beloved.
Yeah.
That you want to do it justice in your own way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's so many directions that we could go, so much more we could talk about, but it's just, I think we've said a lot of true and...
I think it's a satisfactory episode.
Yeah.
Because I think in the same way that there's so many great things in the book that are not in the movie, and yet the movie doesn't seem to be missing anything.
Yeah.
It's because it's not possible to get all of that in a movie. Some of it doesn't translate well to screens.
Right.
The movie would be 5 hours long.
Yeah.
I think it's the same thing when you're talking about something like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that would have to be multiple podcast episodes.
Yeah.
And this one podcast episode, we've been recording for almost 3 hours, and it's going to be a podcast episode plus two bonus episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
So I feel like, you know, realizing that we've covered good ground. Like, what was the point of it and this podcast to talk about rad things that you
yeah,
like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And why you like them, and then to also have guests on sometimes, and they talk about why they like them. And I feel like
that's,
we've gotten
that's,
that
across. Yeah, I think we've checked it off.
You've got, yeah, there's plenty of... And if anything, it entices you to want to go watch it again.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then you're like,
or
oh,
read the book or watch the Andre the Giant
documentary.
Documentary.
Really good.
Yeah.
Or and read like, Carrie Ellis's book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And or, you go and you watch you know. And you're like, oh, you know, I forgot about Hello, Lady. And like, yes. Hello, Lady.
Oh,
it's, like,
have,
it's like, oh, we need a cloak. And he just, Andre just
he
pulls
just
a cloak.
To have
yeah.
A cloak.
It fits so nice. He said, I'll go keep it.
Yeah, exactly. There's just so much. And then, like, you know, I want my father back, you son of a bitch. Like, that kind of, you son of a bitch. Son of a bitch.
Oh, God.
But
oh, his,
but it, which Manny Patinkin was like his father died of cancer, and so he was like especially motivated.
Yeah, he was saying that really played into
cancer
his,
is
where
that,
his head was.
Yeah. Cancer is that son of a
exactly.
bitch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's just if anything, it's a testament to how much classic things are in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm satisfied.
Yeah. And those of you listening out there, I'm sure if you're a fan, it means something to you, and we would. Love to hear about that.
Uh-huh.
Reach out to us on social media.
Yep.
We have listeners and friends who are wonderful about reaching out to us, like in text, so who let us know. And
what he means is our mom and me text them live while I'm like when I'm listening to an episode, I will text my comments.
Oh, of course.
As I'm listening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the, we also have Joe Gilbert, Dave Little, Jeff Wright.
Yeah.
Like
we
tons of people who reach out to us, which
much appreciated.
Much appreciated.
Yeah.
And we hope you enjoyed this episode with Samantha. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I am excited for 2023 for the show because we already are talking about things we're going to do.
Yep.
We're going to have a few.
A lot more themed months.
Themed months.
Yeah.
Themes.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I want you to write a theme. our first themed month is going to be JCVD January.
Oh, of course.
However, it's John Candy Van Damme January. So we're going to do a John Candy movie, a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie,
a
John
Candy
movie, and a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, kind of... Jean-Claude's a bit much, so...
We need a little bit of a buffer between Jean-Claude movies.
We need the movies where Jean-Claude's like, this is kind of a creep. You know who's not a creep?
John Candy.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can't wait to embark on that.
Cool Runnings.
Sorry, no, you're right.
It just popped in my head.
It's been so long since I've watched Cool Runnings.
But we're excited for what we're going to be doing on the show. We hope that it is a... great year. It ends up being a great year for all of you out there because we care about you and we hope you enjoy listening to the show. If only we bring you a little bit of joy an hour and a half out of the day.
Yeah.
So thank you all for listening in 2022. We can't wait to see you back in 2023.
Uh-huh.
Samantha, as always, thank you for joining us.
Oh,
more of you
for
next year.
Me.
Yeah,
we will have more of you next year. But until then,
be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why wouldn't you want to be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time.